evening. Hopefully I'm on. Oh. How are we?
Good.
Isn't it? Yeah, I'm good. Good. Thanks, Mum. Very cool. Isn't it cool? Or isn't it true, the words that nothing compares, nothing could ever come close than His presence? And we sang that this morning, and I thought, man, that is so cool, because it's what God has been talking to me over the last week in regards to this message. And it actually came to me while I was away last weekend in the hills chasing deer, one of my greatest passions, one of. And I was away with my older brother and a friend of mine, Phil. And it was hilarious because we were up this ridge and it was steep. You're looking sort of on 80 to 90 degree angles and you're going, my goodness, I've got to climb up there. And we're in the middle of nowhere. We've been chopping in. And we stand there catching our breath, and I suddenly look at everybody, all the three of us, and we're on our phones. We were Instagramming, Facebooking, we were checking our emails, texting with our families, and no matter where we go, we can be connected. And I was laughing at that because I was like, here we are on a purpose to go and do, because we were hunting for a Seeker Foundation. We were doing a bit of culling work for them, which was an amazing experience and opportunity, but we were still distracted by our phones. We got up halfway and we just sort of, it was my older brother's birthday, and so obviously he had a good excuse. I was checking in with my family to make sure they're all right. So it was, yeah, you know, we can get away with that sort of stuff. But it came to me that, man, I get so distracted so easily. And so I purposely said to the guys, let's split off in three different directions and we'll just hunt along. And I disappeared because I knew I needed to spend some time with God. And so I hid. And I spent some time on a hillside where I'm pretty much looking down and it was steep. And I'm saying, God, you know, I need your presence. No matter where I am and no matter what I go, I need your presence with me. And I just had the most amazing time in the presence of God. And I looked at that time as we stood on the hill and I looked at each other and I think because I acknowledged it and I said, man, look at us, we're on our phones in the middle of the bush, in the middle of nowhere. And three words came to me, and that was connection, distraction, and purpose. And I really felt God, that's where God wanted to, for us to sort of nestle in regards to being in His presence this morning. And so I want to ask you a question before I start off. Actually, two questions in regards to connection. This is a question we ask my children around the dinner table at times. If you could have one person come to your house for the evening, who would it be? Celebrity, someone famous, someone in history, they don't have to be alive, but if you could spend the evening with one person who inspires you, who encourages you, who would it be? You can answer that question, throw me out some names. Who is it that you'd love to sit under for an evening? Paul, Apostle Paul.
I was going to say Sonny Moore
Williams. It's just the muscles, I'd feel inferior, wouldn't I? What are some other people? Who would you love... Yeah, let's get spiritual.
Okay, genuinely.
Yeah. Sorry, Genghis Khan? Anybody else brave enough to say, who would they love to just sit in the presence of for an evening? Oprah. Who knows? Could be your famous celebrity. My kids come up with all these random things that they're into at the stage. And the other question I want to ask you, what are you dreaming about? What is on your heart? What is that one place or that one vision that God has given you that you can't wait to achieve? That one goal that you just, it's what you live for. It's, man, God has promised to me this for years and I cannot wait to get there. I cannot wait to see this. I cannot wait to see it outplayed, to be in that moment and say, wow, I've made it. What are you dreaming about? And I've been reading a fair bit of Exodus and 2 Samuel at the moment. For me, they're sort of just emerging together quite nicely as God prepares me. And I was looking at the Israelite people. And I thought, you know, their dream and their passion, I believe, at the time was probably going to have that moment where they get to sit on their porch in the promised land and think, we've made it. No longer in slavery. We've had the promise come down from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We've had that promise for generation after generation. And now we get to stand in that place of our promised land, flowing with milk and honey. We get to sit on the porch and go, man, we've made it. And I felt God say to me that though at that time, the person that I think that the Israelite people wanted to have around the most was probably Moses. He was the man that was going to take them there. He brought them out of Egypt. He was their leader. He was their spiritual father. He was the man who climbed the mountain and spent time with God. That would have been inspirational. And I think that they would have had Moses. Say, man, if I could spend some time in the presence of just Moses, he talks to God. The Bible says that he has conversations with God as if it was face to face as a friend. He came down from the mountain glowing radiant from being in the presence of God. I thought, wow, that is amazing. So who did you choose? Did you choose a person when you thought about it, or did you choose God himself? Because quite often I think for like the Israelite people, man, I was like, I'd love to have time with Moses because Moses spent time with God. And yet we have the opportunity to sit in the presence of God the Father. And we should be longing to have him with us the whole time, at all times. Quite often we put leaders or we put famous people and say, man, I'd love to spend some time with them. I'd love to get their act there, to get to sit under their leadership or hear their wisdom or their teaching or hear their stories. And yet God's an option. And we should be longing and desiring to have God as the one that comes to the first. Who would you love? Jesus. Love him to come and sit at the table. Who else? He's an option. He's the option. See, Jesus created a way for us to climb their own mountains. You know, Moses was the one who was the only one allowed up in the presence of God. And yet Jesus has made a way for us because of, you know, the sin that separated us from the presence of God, Jesus came out of the way. And we can climb the mountain ourselves. We can sit in his presence. Imagine what church would be like if we came from a Sunday after spending Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday in the presence of God. And we came to church on a Sunday with like-minded people who had spent time in the presence of God and their faces were radiant with the time spent with God. How would that look as a non-Christian coming into the place to seek God? It's, you know, would it be about the polished speaker? Or would a great music session or time and praise God, would that speak to them? Or would it seeing someone who spent time in the presence of God and radiating the very glory of God because he had spent time with the people, the Israelite people, were fearful when they saw Moses come out and he had put a veil on because it was like too much. Really feel that God's saying, get into my presence, climb the mountain. Yeah. You can climb the mountain. And he's longing for us to climb that mountain. I want us to have a look at Exodus 33. So if you've got your Bibles, or we could turn there. And so what happened prior to Exodus 33 is that Moses had gone up to the mountain. He had 70 elders follow with him and Joshua, and they camped there. And then Moses headed up to the mountain. And he spent about 40 days and 40 nights in God's presence. And it says there, as God came down and a cloud, from the outside it looked like a cloud of fire. And so those that had gathered and were waiting for Moses grew a little bit restless because Moses was their spiritual father. He was their go-to man. You know, if Moses didn't speak to them, then they were lost. They became lost. And so these people, they gathered around Aaron, who was left in charge at the time, and said, look, we don't know where Moses has gone. We don't know what's happened to him. So can you make a God for us to worship? Because they were lost. Without his direction, without his leadership. And so Aaron says, well, just gather all your jewelry from your wives and your children, and we'll see what comes up. And Aaron actually fashioned out this calf. And he said, here you go, worship that. This can be your gods. And so, and Moses was up in the mountain, and God says to him, you better get back down. Because your people have... Yeah, it's not going well. What I found interesting in that part is that that God had given Moses the tablets of testimonies and all the instructions. God had written it with his own finger, the word says. And yet later on, Moses has to go back up. But Moses had to create the tablets. Moses had to write it. I thought, man, what's in that, God? God had done it all first, written it with his own finger, and then the second time Moses has to go up. Moses had to chisel it all out himself. I thought, man, there's a story in that. So look into that. I think that'd be quite exciting. But Moses comes down, and he meets up with Joshua, and they're heading back to the people, and Joshua says, it sounds like war in our camp. And Moses says, no, that's not victory or defeat, that is singing. And he comes down and he sees his people dancing and worshipping this idol. And so Moses obviously gets a rage and he throws his tablets down. They smash all over the ground. And he now has to think, well, now I've got to go back and make an atonement for your sin and what you're doing for God. And he calls, who is with me? And the Levite people come across and he gives them a sword and they kill a few people. And then you get to this verse that fascinated me, in Exodus 33. And this is what I've read this every day this week, and that's the only thing that I've been reading because it's just, I've been absorbed in it. In Exodus 33, verse 1, it says, then the Lord said to Moses, leave this place, you and the people you brought out of Egypt. You and the people. God's mad. And go up to the land I promised an oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I will send an angel before you and drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites. Yeah, that one. All the parasites, basically. And the Jebusites. Go up to the land flowing with milk and honey. But I will not go with you because you are stiff-necked people and I might destroy you on your way. God's pretty mad. But what I found interesting and what jumped out at me in that is that God was still prepared to honor his promise. God will honor his promises. If he's given you dreams and he's given you visions, God will honor them. But here God was saying, you can have it because I made an oath and I made a promise and that's who I am. You can go and have the land flowing with milk and honey. You can have it all, but I'm not going to go with you. And I love Moses' responses in verse 15. It says, then Moses said to him, if your presence does not go with us, then do not send us from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? Moses knows that without God's presence, the promised land is nothing compared to God's presence. And the challenge that I felt God say to me is that the dreams and the visions that I had, would I have been prepared to go, thanks God, and take it without his presence? Because we chase so much of what God has given us or what he might have put on picture or in our vision, and we say, man, I can't wait to be there. And we chase after it, but we miss his presence. And I feel that God was saying that in his timing, he will fulfill everything that he has promised for you. Don't run ahead of the game. Don't run ahead of what he's got for you, but stay in his presence. Because nothing compares and nothing can come close to his presence. We get distracted so easily. I get distracted so easily. Standing up and climbing a mountain, I look at all the obstacles in my way, the windfall, the fact that it's muddy and it's steep, and I would take two steps and take one back because it's hard work. It was steep and there was obstacles in the way. We get distracted and all of a sudden my phone beeps in my pocket because I got into reception and stop what I'm doing and we get distracted. So often I start to open my Bible and all chaos might break loose at the home. And I've got to put it down and I feel I have to put it down and attend to it. Or I start to pray and I get tired and I yawn. And how many of you distractions get in the way of you standing in the presence of God? Because the enemy knows that for you to climb the mountain and you to get into God's presence, nothing compares and nothing can come close to that. And he will do whatever he can to distract you and take you away from standing in the presence of God. And then I look at 2 Samuel. And I read the story about David and Goliath again. And Goliath is intimidating the Israelite people. He's big and he's bulk and he looks scary on the outside. But then David comes along, a 17-year-old boy. Where does he come from? Being in the presence of God as a shepherd boy, singing songs, praising God. And he comes to the front line and asks what's going on. And he doesn't see the giant as a physical, wow, that guy's massive. No, he sees with the spirit and he sees that this is a spiritual battle. And he goes after the spiritual battle and he wins the physical. Because he comes from a place of intimacy with God and his presence with God. And he doesn't see the physical. He sees beyond that. He sees the victory that God has given him. And he walks up, stands there, slings his sling, kills Goliath, takes Goliath's head or sword, cuts his head off. Do you know what David did with Goliath's head? Anybody, any guesses? He takes it to Jerusalem. 17-year-old boy carries Goliath's head. He takes it to Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is inhabited by the Jebusites, the enemy of God's people, a fortified city on a hill. And he puts it on a spike on the outside of the Jerusalem, of the walls, as if to say, I don't know when, and I don't know how.
Wow, great.
But that's God's place, and I'm coming for it. Because God, he spends time with God, and he has a vision, he has a dream, he's got so much more. David didn't go to the front line that day thinking that he was going to kill a giant, but he was prepared because he came from the presence of God to do what God had ever put on his heart, and he takes Goliath's head, and he marks it, and he said, that is God's. I don't know when and I don't know how, but I'm coming for it. 13 years later, David becomes king of all of Israel. He was king of Hebron for a while. And he could have stayed there. He had everything. But the very first thing that David does is he rallies his troops and he heads back to Jerusalem. Because he knows God's got a purpose. Not to stay comfortable, but to keep taking back what belongs to God. And he stands at the walls of Jerusalem. And if you have a look at 2 Samuel verse 5, it's 2 Samuel chapter 5, sorry, verse 6. The king and his men marched to Jerusalem to attack the Jebusites who'd lived there. And the Jebusites said to David, "You will not get in here. Even the blind and the lame can ward you off." That phrase, the blind and the lame, I thought quite fascinating because it says it three times in about three verses. Thinking, if I was going to attack a city or defend a city, I wouldn't call someone, "Oh, you're blind and lame," because that would just, for me, that would provoke them. But I looked into it a little bit and did a bit of research, and what they were doing is that they were referring to a bit of ancestry. The blind, when Isaac was on his deathbed, and Jacob cheats Esau out of his birthright or his blessing. Isaac's lying in bed and Jacob puts on goat skin, makes himself all hairy. And Isaac says to him, "You sound like Jacob, but you feel like Esau." and he blesses him. And these people, these Jebusites, they know their history. They say, come on, you can't attack this place. Look, you've got to, look where you come from. A blind old man who couldn't even get a blessing right. And the lame, Jacob, wrestled with God. And God displaced his hip. And he walked from that day forth, limp and a little lame. And the Jebusite people knew that. And they were hurling insults about, where do you come from? You come from blind and you come from the lame and you think you're going to attack this high place. And the enemy is nasty. How many times have you been attacked? And the words that people say to you, who are you? Who do you think you are? You're nobody. Look at you. You know, you might have a rough upbringing and all of a sudden they're pointing out, look, you don't come from much. Robert Lewis, who orchestrated the quest that we do as a manhood, shares the time in his life when he went to a hardware store to buy some supplies for his dad to fix a whole lot of stuff at home. And he gets there and he goes to the counter and says, I need this, this, and this. And there's a whole group of people around them. And he asks, I said, what are you doing, mate? What are you doing, Robert? Oh, my dad needs this to fix the things at home. And they have this conversation that he hears. Oh, that Mr. Lewis, he doesn't know much about building, but he sure knows a thing or two about alcohol. Because his father was a drunk. And Robert Lewis died that day. Because all of a sudden he was, what have I got? My father is a drunk. Well, I'm not going to live up to much. And all of a sudden the enemy squashed him. And it took a fair bit for him to break free from that. Quite often you hear sayings, oh, if only I was as half the man as my dad was or that person was, because he might have been so spiritual. If I could only do half the miracles, or if I could only have half the ministry that person has. And I was thinking about that, and God said, if we started off that way and all you ever had was half Christianity, wouldn't end up much. But God says, you pray like Elisha. I want double what Elijah had. And Christianity grows. Don't let the voice of the enemy distract you from the purpose that God has got for you to spend time in his presence. Because that is the most important thing. You are valuable. You are children of the Most High God. That is your lineage. So David, he stands at the walls and he sees a water spout. And he says, if we can get up there, we will take this high place. And so Joab, the first man up the water spout, he climbs up there and it's dirty and it's mucky and it's hard and it's smelly, if you know a thing or two about water spouts. Dark, dingy place, small crack. Probably climbing on his hands and knees. And if sometimes our walk is like that. It's not going to be plain sailing. It's not going to be easy. Climbing a mountain is not easy. It can be hard work. But we are overcomers. And he reaches the top and he sees that they were all talk. It was just a big hab to try and distract them from not taking the city. And so they overrule the city and they take it, and David calls it the city of David. It was God's city and he lives there and he builds it, and we know Jerusalem, one of probably the most famous geographical place in history. David took that high place for God because he had a purpose. He didn't know when, he didn't know how, but he did it in God's timing. He didn't run ahead. He probably could have, with the backing of the whole army all of that time, because he just defeated Goliath, and they could have, quite possibly, who knows if they would have taken the city. But it wasn't his timing. And so David waited in the presence of God until God said, "That's now time." don't race ahead of what God has for us in our visions and our dreams to pursue the goal. But the most important thing is to spend time up the mountain with God. God wants us individually to spend time in his presence. We're not going to get to heaven and stand before God and say, oh, I'm with him. I'm his plus one. We don't go through to heaven on the coattails of someone else, chasing someone else. We go because we know Jesus and he knows us from intimate personal relationship time spent on the mountain. A mountain that is hard to climb at times, a mountain that will get distracted on, where the enemy will still hurl abuse at you or try and stop you from spending time in the presence of God, because it's from that place of being intimate and in the presence of God that all things are possible in God's strength and in God's timing. Climb your mountain. It is good to have leaders guide us, but you've got to climb it yourself. We've got to spend that time in his presence where we just allow him to soak us. Nothing compares, nothing could ever come close than his presence. So as we sing a song or two to finish off with, I really want us to just really not necessarily put aside the dreams and visions that God has, thank him for the visions that God has given us and the dreams and the passions, but don't let that be what you chase. Let it be his presence. Let us stand in his presence and climb that mountain, because Jesus has made a way for us to enter into that, an amazing presence with God the Father. Be encouraged when something comes at you. Hold steadfast. Climb your mountain. Because we are overcomers. If God has given you a vision, put a stake in the ground and say, yeah, I don't know how and I don't know when. But for now, I'm going to stay in his presence. Spend time every day in his presence. Nothing compares and nothing will ever come close. Let's worship God. His presence is here with us. Let's enjoy it together as family.